Brothers. There are two boys in my life. The older boy, Sean, is very serious, his eyebrows thick and expressive, like attractive cables running straight to his heart. The younger boy, Blake, likes to perch on top of cushions or steps or countertops with his knees to his chest. He's always kicking something, kneading something, digging at something, scabbed and ready. I don't know who these two boys are, not yet, only that we pose in pictures together from time to time, and that somehow, in some places, I love them. There are two boys in my apartment. That's what my mother tells me anyway, when we have to pack up for the weekends and stay with Auntie T. When we leave, my father locks up the room with my briar horses spread across the carpet, my mother's lipstick-smacked tissues piled up in a garbage can, a door locked in front of any lingering silhouette of a woman or child. My father plays catch with the boys on the weekends, buffed leather to ball, a square of sun behind the building. I wonder, still, how he explained our locked room, if it supposedly served any purpose. There are three children on a beach, the two boys, now teens, and me. I'm chubby-legged, wearing a flopping sun hat, shoveling my feet into the sand. My mother is reclined in a chair, darkening beneath the sun like a soft, worn saddle. My father is speaking to the boys in their neon swimsuits, white smears of lotion circling their shoulders, their backs. They all look at me, sitting on my stupid towel. Their faces are exquisitely serious. Waves crash over in fangs. The two boys remember this day, this moment, more than I do. They remember every second of it. A boiler room, an extra closet, a secret Narnia, a reclusive roommate, a door to nowhere, just a door, long stuck, another liquor cabinet, storage for cleaning supplies, a grown-up room, a room of hidden pets. My father was an excellent liar. His lies were like laminated sheets of paper. The facts were the facts, shining, reflective, unable to be torn even when a corner peeled. I don't actually remember their neon swimsuits. Of course I don't. What I remember is a photograph taken on the beach that day. Two boys squinting into a camera, me in the middle. Look at them together. None of our faces are ready. The two boys, now teens, looking at me on the edge of my towel. Round Asian child, a face nothing like theirs, kneading hopelessly into colder sand. You see her, said my father, that girl? Yes, say the boys. She's not just that woman's daughter, he says. She's your sister. There are two boys in need of a home. Hurricane Andrew chewed up their land, spat it out in splinters. My mother, father, and I drive down to Coconut Grove, where we bring the two boys canned foods and bags of chips. A woman, pearled with sweat, opens the door to an apartment. It's dark inside, damp. There's no power for miles. The woman looks at me more carefully than anyone has ever looked at me, his other child. Hello, she says. The two boys at her side, guarding her like soldiers. Are you old? I ask her. My words have no malice, no motive. I'm just a kid, carrying cans in my arms as if they are baby dolls. One of the boys says, Mom, and I can barely breathe. This mother is nothing like my mother. This mother is not my father's. How many mothers can exist in the same world? And do they all live in locked, dark rooms? There are two teenage boys visiting from South Africa, where they live. My mother, father, and I now live in a big white house with the indoor pool. My brothers stay in the guest house with black and white Berber carpet, a lofted bedroom area, a drum set. The older boy keeps to himself, folded inside the pages of Hawthorne, Faulkner. The younger one has just dyed his hair electric blue, and he body slams me into the mattress each time I try to sneak into their house. I love it when he does this, when he raises my body above his head and throws me down into the springs. I try and try again to bother them, to get the slams, these stunning moments of rage. Somehow, even then, I already know we all need this. If you asked me, I would have told you I was an only child. If you asked again, I would have said I have two brothers, somewhere. Where somewhere? Africa? Why? To be away from me. And their mother? I hate their mother. My older brother doesn't speak, I tell my friends at school. He's a real asshole. At the time, I think my brother hoards all his thoughts and words and opinions for later, for the people he thinks deserve them more than I do. I never remember seeing him smile. Everything about him was in his eyebrows. One day, while visiting, he finds a box in our garage full of his high school photographs, love notes, yearbooks. He reads the scraps aloud on our living room floor, laughing, grafting together different pieces of paper, different memories. It's the first time it occurs to me that my brother has a life outside the few days a year in which I see him. He has jokes. He's been in love. I don't even know him. I feel at once both enamored and deceived. I never hated their mother with any purpose. I never even knew her. I hated her because there were two mothers and only one father. If you ask the two boys, they might tell you they had a sister, somewhere. Where somewhere? Boca Raton. Why? Because she got a life better than ours. And her mother? Well, they hated her too. Imagine that locked room in the weekend apartment. Imagine a father around less and less, a man moved from one home to another, my mother's lipstick on his collars, her scent everywhere, my father's new habits, a new ring, his new life. Would you blame them? After she dies, I will wonder about the two boys' mother. I will study the African seed pod she collected, floating in a glass shadow frame on my older brother's wall. I will consider the dimensions of her urn on the mantelpiece next to my father's urn. I will touch the art she collected over the years, each paint stroke, the frames, and wonder at the value she placed on each one, the ways in which they may have moved her. She was an artist. She made two beautiful men. Once, she loved my father. Sometimes it feels like too big a wonder. I keep things from my brothers. I don't tell them about the baseball bats or the women and men who've appeared in our house in puffs of smoke. I don't tell them about the pantry incident. I don't tell them about the burning stink or the stuff or the way our father turns off in the middle of speaking sometimes, his face bloodshot, his eyes gone. Instead, I ask the younger brother to teach me how to play the drums. In the guest house, he lets John Coltrane spool around a cassette until the button clicks, and then we play him again, again, as he shows me how to wrap my fingers around drumsticks, how to keep time, snap the hi-hat, stuff the bass drum with a snail-rolled towel. We beat the snare until it silvers, until we can't hear anything outside the sound that it makes, until it needs a new skin. If there are real men, I haven't met them yet. Not when my father moves to New York, not when my mother falls. So when my brothers and father come home for Christmas, when my brother hands me those Sour Patch candies, you must understand why I said nothing. I'm still trying to explain. I'm visiting New York, a teenager, and there's a concert in Brooklyn. Blake is playing in the show, and Sean wants us to come out and watch. Sean takes me down into the subway for the first time, and I scream when I see a rat on the tracks. He laughs at me, covers my eyes with his hands. Perhaps, I think, this is the first thing he's learning about me as a person removed from a mother or father. I am a girl who is afraid of rats. We make it to a dark Bushwick living room where my brother plugs at the bass. He's wearing a silver tie, and everyone in the room is screaming, cheering him on. Sean nods his head to the music. He is mostly quiet, listening, sipping on a beer. Blake shreds the strings. He hooks his arms around my neck when he sees me. "This is my sister," he says to his friends. We all have our own languages. As adults, in a hotel room, I tell Blake the truth about the pantry incident. The way my mother's skin tore like a piece of overripe fruit, the purple of it. "That's why we left town," I say. We didn't mean to leave you two with the mess. Blake looks at me, blinks hard. I didn't know, he says, any of that. Sometimes it feels like we are only this. Moments of knowing and unknowing one another. A sound that is foreign until it's familiar. A drill that's a scream until it's a drill. Sometimes it's nothing more than piecing together the ways in which our hearts have all been broken over the same moments, but in different places. But that's romantic. Sometimes it's realer than that. My older brother speculates that my father knew he would die before we did. Just days before, my father wanted a shave. He'd been in a coma for 2 weeks, and a beard scrabbled out of his face, unnatural, patchy, the color of his old cigarette ash. My father was obsessed with the shave, the right razor, a smooth finish. The best sign, I said. He cares about the way he looks. He must be coming back. But my brothers had seen this before. Their mother wanted lipstick, a compact, the day before she died. A dazzling exit. My older brother's face became a gray wedge in his hands as Blake and I shaved my father's cheeks. Nobody said a word as we moved the blade above and below every last tube, humming a song. Children being dutiful children. All that brutal love. We were so careful not to cut. When I file that restraining order against Chad, Sean takes me to Whidbey Island, to a residency, where I will feel safer. My brother rides the Mulcatillo ferry with me, buys me swirled cones of ice cream, takes me out on the deck to look at the sea. I'm proud of you, he says. After the court hearing, I arrive back to his house in Seattle, where he blends smoothies for me, makes my bed, picks up my favorite kind of crab for dinner. Remember how Dad made them? I ask. We don't, but we make up a new recipe of our own. There are three of us in a photograph. One of us, me, does not look like the others. I am always in the middle of these two men, who are tall, handsome, protective in their postures. We do not fit, but I can tell you that we have the same fat toes, the same predisposition to canker sores, the same ability to mimic accents. We land impersonations. We drink when we are lonely, sometimes when we're together, but mostly alone in our separate cities. We chew the same. We laugh with our eyes closed. There are thousands of ways to love men, Lydia Yuknovich once wrote. And when I watch my brothers button their shirts, or body slam my niece, or dance with their lips puckered, I think I know all of them. There are two men in my life. Their names are Sean and Blake. The older, more serious one pushes his daughter on her bicycle as she lifts her feet from the pedals. The younger one has three different colors of hair, dark on top, graying at the hairline, red in the sideburns. Every word from him sounds like jazz. They are beautiful, good men. The three of us take a walk through a park in Seattle. It's spring. We are all still grieving the same father. I am 29. The leaves of a tree glow bright and then darken as the clouds pass, as if the tree has a pulse. When will we see you again? My brothers want to know, and I believe them. I believe that they miss me for every year we didn't have, the way I miss them too. Sometimes I miss them most when we're all together, when we're already looking back at the moment, wondering how it will ossify with time, how much more we will know and unknow about each other. That little girl on the beach, I was yours.